This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Wednesday afternoon, February 21st. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The record-breaking basketball skills of the University of Iowa's Caitlin Clark are impacting the sports apparel and collectible markets. We'll take a closer look in our next segment. But right now, Governor Pritzker reportedly plans to ask state lawmakers for $500 million for the development of quantum technology. Joining us to discuss what quantum computing is and how a big investment will impact Chicago's tech scene is Matt Wren, founder and chief technology officer, VRAR Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And first off, what is quantum computing and how does it differ from some of the other things we've been talking about, like machine learning or AI or just the plain old computer you have at your desk?
Thanks for having me back, Rob. That's actually a great way to ask the question is, you know, how is it different? So how is it different? A normal regular computer deals in what are called bits, zero or one, just binary states. And a quantum computer is basically using effectively charged electrons to what's called superposition. So it can kind of have one and zero at the same time or both or neither. It's a really sort of very complicated physics concept. But to your point, why is it important is all this other stuff that you mentioned, artificial intelligence, really heavy mathematics. Quantum computing can basically do it faster. And that's why it's important. What makes this important is that a quantum computer, because of its ability to essentially use charged electrons and charged atoms as the kind of memory and the processing, it can just run through very, very complicated math problems really, really fast, much faster than a standard computer can.
And this requires an entirely different type of infrastructure. Of that $500 million ask from Governor Pritzker during his budget address today, $300 million of that funding would go to build a cryogenic chamber for this quantum computer because some of these, it requires extremely cold temperatures.
Right. So the way that a quantum computer works is ultimately you're dealing with, like I said, charged atoms, charged electrons. And so you have to effectively have the state at near zero temperature. So everything, you know, everything is very, very sensitive at that point. So magnetic fields, the amount of electricity, the temperature, any sort of movement, all of that stuff really affects the ability for the quantum computer to function. And so what you're dealing with, again, what I mentioned earlier, you're dealing with on a regular computer, you have what's called a bit, which is zero or one. When you deal with quantum computers, you talk about qubits. And the problem is right now there's only qubits, the more you sort of scale them up, the more you make them powerful, which is what makes them useful, the more you get errors. And so the big problem with scaling things up is something called fault tolerance. The more qubits you add, the more likely it is for you to have errors. And so part of the reason for having all of these more advanced facilities is so that we can deal with what it's going to take to actually scale up quantum computing and make it valuable.
And then from an economic impact standpoint, the state is attracting tech business. You have Rivian in Bloomington. So there is an EV company in the state. Google is increasing its presence in the Chicago area. It just bought the Thompson Center. You have VRAR Chicago. What does quantum computing do to the state of Illinois in terms of making it a more attractive place for tech companies to do business?
Well, quantum computing itself is a growth technology. There's a lot of people that are putting effort into it. So just having quantum computing center here is going to be a lot of attraction of jobs. But the offshoot of that is also, you know, there's a huge growth right now. As we've talked about several times, artificial intelligence is a huge growth area. And the more quantum computing scales up and becomes a capable technology, the more that can add to what you can do with artificial intelligence. So, you know, heavy machine learning, heavy AI, cryptography is another big area that deals with quantum computing because you can solve math problems really fast. So a lot of our current current encryption schemes become questionably secure once you start dealing with quantum computers. So it's a huge growth area in terms of technology. These are the things that are really kind of on the front edge of tech research right now: quantum computing, AI, those types of technologies.
Matt Wren, founder and chief technology officer, VRAR Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, the Caitlin Clark effect on the sports world.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Clark from the logo.
University of Iowa basketball star Caitlin Clark is one of the, if not the, story in college basketball this year. Let's discuss the impact she's having in multiple areas, including the collectibles market. We welcome in Stephen Fischler, CEO of ComicConnect.com and Metropolis Comics in New York. Stephen, thank you for joining us today. And how does the fact that you know if you're going to a game like one where Caitlin Clark breaks the record for the most points scored in women's college basketball, if you know you're going to be there, you're going to keep everything, how does that distort the collectibles market, because everybody who is in attendance is going to hang on to the memorabilia from that particular game?
Well, basketball has historically been a men's sport. Obviously, you're talking about the superstars of basketball, college or professional. And this is a unique moment where a female basketball star, college basketball stars, sort of broke through the sort of that ceiling of notoriety. And she is as great as any male player has ever been. Her accomplishments are quite outstanding, but she really is very noteworthy because she's the standout female star. And I think there's an international audience for basketball. And I think a lot of the collectibles that are associated with her will be sort of cherished for years and years. I doubt that her record, because she's still playing, is going to be broken anytime soon. So when they think of the greats of basketball, she's going to be in there. And I think that creates a possibility sort of a cherished collectible, a piece of this moment of history for people to hang on to.
Generally, what is the superstar effect in a particular sport? And when you have one player who is just exceptional, a generational talent, does a rising tide indeed lift all boats?
Well, I think what the benefit of her notoriety is it really casts women's basketball in a more positive light. You know, the world of basketball is certainly an international sport, but it's been historically men's basketball. Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal, LeBron James. I think this creates an opportunity for, awareness and possibilities for female basketball stars. So she sort of sets the way for other people to be sort of more accepted in the category of greats. And I think it's a tremendous thing that not only is her accomplishments quite remarkable, but she sets the path for other female basketball stars and other sports stars, after she's come and gone. So I think it is a positive thing. It just creates an acceptance that this is a great sport, regardless if it's a male sport or a female sport.
And the name, image, and likeness era in college athletics is still fairly young. It dates back to 2021, but she's probably one of the few superstars in college athletics who can cash in on her fame at the moment, and rolling up nearly $1 million in endorsements from Gatorade, Nike, and State Farm Insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that A lot of these major brands, Nike or Adidas or Reebok, they're looking for iconic stars to attach their brand to, and this just fits into the mold of a LeBron James or Michael Jordan quite well. And I actually, you know what, I think it is a little different in a positive way, in that it's inspiring to 50% of the population, roughly 50%, which is the females. The females in society want a role model, and most women are not going to look at Michael Jordan or LeBron James as a role model. But now Caitlin Clark sort of fits that bill. So I think that's, this could be, this could really lead to some very significant developments down the road in terms of bringing women and women's appreciation of professional sports or college sports, for that matter.
Stephen Fischler, CEO of ComicConnect.com and Metropolis Comics in New York. Thanks for joining us today, talking about the Caitlin Clark effect.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Capital One is poised to acquire North Suburban-based Discover Financial Services in a $35 billion all-stock purchase. Let's discuss the potential fallout of the proposed deal with Matt Schultz, Chief Credit Analyst with LendingTree in Austin. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like the big win here, as far as Capital One is concerned, is that now have access to Discover's payments network.
Yeah, that's, it's a big deal because it changes the way they do things, and it makes them more like American Express, which is also a credit card issuer and credit card network, and differentiates themselves from some other big card issuers like Chase and Bank of America. So it's a big deal.
And is this does this reduce competition in the credit card space? Because it sounds like, in some respects, it makes it even more competitive now that that Capital One doesn't have to use the Visa and MasterCard networks.
Yeah, when it comes to issuing cards, it lowers the competition a little bit. But when it comes to the credit card networks, meaning the companies that process the transactions when you swipe a card at a takeout counter, it will likely bring in more competition. Visa and MasterCard are head and shoulders above Discover and American Express when it comes to the volume of transactions they handle. But with the power of Capital One behind them now, there's a decent chance that that we may see more growth for that Discover network and more competition.
Well, this may not have much of an impact on credit card customers right now, and all the action is taking place as far as fees are concerned behind the scenes. Could we see a shift in that fee structure potentially in the consumer's favor?
Yeah, we potentially could, where we see these credit card network fees, because of the competition, get lower, and thus it saves the businesses and retailers more money, and thus in theory they could pass that savings on to the consumer. No guarantee that that'll happen, but it's certainly possible.
And what is the timeline for the completion of this particular merger? I mean, is this something that could be finished this year or maybe early next year?
That's the goal. There's certainly, and the companies seem pretty optimistic about that, but there's also a non-zero chance that this gets derailed as well, because the Biden administration and the CFPB have been really focused on the credit card space in recent months, so it's certainly going to get a lot of regulatory scrutiny.
And then very quickly, Matt, and lastly, what does this mean for Visa and MasterCard if a great deal of that Capital One business goes from away from their networks and over to the Discover networks? They'll have to make up that money somehow.
Yeah, it means a lot less revenue, and it could end up leading to them trying to raise fees in other ways. So it's certainly something to watch.
Matt Schultz, Chief Credit Analyst with LendingTree in Austin. Also, the author of a new book called Ask Questions, Save Money, Make More, How to Take Control of Your Financial Life. That book is released on March 19th. Thanks for joining us today. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, understanding the value of financial literacy.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Charges are filed in a shooting that left a Sen High School student dead. Lawyers for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange are in the final round of attempts to prevent his extradition to the U.S. In Personal Finance Wednesday, examining the connection between financial literacy and financial well-being. Also on the financial front, a loophole has been discovered in the application for federal college aid. WBBM business markets are lower. The Dow is down 45 points, NASDAQ down 111, the S&P 500 is down 12 points, 61 degrees right now in Chicago, under cloudy skies at O'Hare, partly sunny skies at Midway, going up to a sunny 64. It's 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, charges have been filed in a shooting that killed a Sen High School student and wounded two others. This is Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling.
As a result of this, two juveniles have been charged in the shooting. A 14-year-old male and a 17-year-old male have both been charged with one felony count of first-degree murder and two felony counts of attempted first-degree murder. The 17-year-old is being charged as an adult. The 14-year-old has also been charged with two additional felony counts of aggravated battery with the discharge of a firearm.
16-year-old Davian Gibson died in the shooting, which happened January 31st, just a few blocks from the school in the Edgewater neighborhood. The founder of WikiLeaks is in a London courtroom for what's believed to be a final legal stand.
Day two of the two-day hearing here, and U.S. prosecutors are arguing why Julian Assange must face espionage charges in the U.S. over leaked classified documents. The WikiLeaks founder hasn't been in court for this last-ditch attempt to prevent his extradition. His wife and lawyer says he's too frail and that sending him to a U.S. prison would be a de facto death sentence. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are lower. Let's see what's moving the markets with Chris Johnson, market strategist with the Johnson Research Group in Cincinnati. Chris, thank you for joining us today. And the story of this Wednesday is waiting for NVIDIA. The big chip maker will report after the bell. It's earnings report.
It certainly is, Rob. It's great to be with you. And I, like everyone else, is going to wait to see what this AI monster has to in store for the market. Expectations are through the roof, obviously. This stock has been bid, 50%, 60% higher as we've run into earnings here. And you're just up an astronomical amount on a one-year basis here. So when you see these stocks, Rob, it kind of gives you that impression that the market is priced for perfection. And I think that's probably the most important thing to realize, that when you're priced for perfection, a stock can't come out and stumble like NVIDIA does. It'll send a little bit of a shockwave through the market. So I think a little bit of caution is due right now as we head into that earnings report.
When you say the markets are priced for perfection, does that mean we're still in a situation where the so-called Magnificent Seven, plus or minus a couple of stocks, have the potential to really move the market? Or is it more of is the movement more broad-based these days compared to a year ago?
It's a little more broad-based these days than a year ago. If you look at the small-cap Russell 2000, it's actually started to participate in the rally. And that's because everybody's looking at the Fed as well, expecting that interest rates are going to come down here in 2024. You're starting to see signs that that may not happen, or at least as quickly as the market would like. And that, again, is part of that price for perfection. It is not just the Magnificent Seven. It is Wall Street and Main Street investors kind of looking at things like the market has nothing to do but give them a tailwind. and there aren't any headwinds. And that's usually when you need to be a little more cautious.
We're talking markets with Chris Johnson, market strategist with the Johnson Research Group in Cincinnati. Speaking of some movement, a shakeup in the Dow. Walgreens is out. Amazon is in. How is that going to change the Dow Jones Industrial Average now that or just the Dow Jones average in general now that Amazon is among the blue chips?
Well, you have to look at it from two different perspectives here. Obviously, Amazon is one of those technology titans. It does add some AI exposure to the Dow Jones Industrial Average. At the same time, they took Walgreens out, or Walgreen Boot Alliance out, and it took some retail. So I think you're around 11% of the index was weighted towards retail. It'll go up a little bit because of the size and price of Amazon. I think it was a great switch. Everybody saw this coming. Walgreen Boot Alliance, as well as CVS, are kind of, I hate to say it, dinosaurs that are operating in the space right now. And certainly in terms of retail, they have lost their hold. So I think this is a good move, a solid move, and it's going to be a strong one for the Dow.
Chris Johnson, market strategist with the Johnson Research Group in Cincinnati. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, putting a price on financial literacy.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. In this segment, we're discussing the importance and value of financial literacy. Let's get some insight from Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport-Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, also the author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thanks for joining us today. And talk about a situation where you can maximize your return on life. I love the way you can set up this segment. This is a way you can give your kids an extra $100,000 over the course of your life or with the course of their life without having to open up a checkbook.
Yes, it is amazing how financial literacy could be a wonderful gift to your kids. And the more that they learn, the more they can save, and it really can set up their financial future.
When is a good time to introduce lessons in financial literacy, and how can you do that? Is there a formal, like a high school class you can take? Is there a class you can take outside of school hours, or can you do it yourself?
It's never too early. You know, even when your kids are young, for example, with my children, we went on vacation when they were young. We'd give each one of them a certain amount of money, $25, $50, and say, don't bother us the rest of vacation. And it was interesting. One would come home with $49 and the other spent it at the airport. But they learned quickly that this is a finite amount of money and they should decide where to spend it. So I think there's things you can teach young children, but really I think when they start to enter high school, financial literacy is really important. In Illinois, there is a consumer ed requirement where they do kind of scratch the surface, but they don't go as deep as you probably want to do with your children.
What are the most important elements of a financial literacy course that really need to be taught, and what are some of the things that can really save your kids money over the course of their life?
I mean, one of the first things is when children are young adults, whether they're working or they're entering college, they're often enticed by credit cards. So teaching the value of paying off those credit cards and avoiding the high interest rates. Also teaching your children to keep a clean credit. Having a clean credit will help them to get lower or preferential mortgage rates when it's time to buy a home, car loans, and things like that. So really teaching early on that credit is really important. Also, budget, you know, it's not what you earn, it's what you save. And living within your means, which I mention often on this show, is probably a huge, huge thing to teach your children. And if they can master that early on and avoid the FOMA, the fear of missing out and keeping up with their friends, that would be a great gift. They also want to make sure when they do have a checking account to avoid overdraft fees and things like that. A lot of kids today don't really have as many checking accounts. There's Venmo, there's Zelle, there's PayPal. There's all these things that are flying through their phones. So making sure they keep track of all of that. And, you know, even when they start to be young adults, opening a small IRA account or taking advantage of 401ks, There's the power of compounding and interest and growth. And you'd be surprised that even if they put $1,000 or $2,000 away early on, that will grow and really help set up financial future.
We're talking to Sherry Greco-Rikus about the importance of financial literacy classes at a young age for your kids. I mean, that seems to be another important lesson to impart. Like, it's not just enough to save, because if you have money just kind of gathering dust in a savings account, it's not doing much for you, and that money can make money for you.
Exactly. And, you know, financial basics are really important. They should understand the difference between a stock, which can have higher growth but higher risk, bonds and cash, which can have, you know, lower growth and lower risk, but really start to build a portfolio that has a balance of both. And when you're younger, you have time on your side. So if you're not going to need that money for 4 to 5 years, put it in some equities, get some growth. And my own personal bias is I believe index funds or fully diversified funds like the Vanguard S&P 500 are a great way to start investing.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday, and still to come, how to take advantage of a federal student application form loophole.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The new streamlined free application for federal student aid form known as FAFSA apparently contains a loophole. Let's talk about the issue with Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner and founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Ed, thank you for joining us today. And the FAFSA form, the redesigned FAFSA form, has been a source of great stress and headaches for a lot of parents with college-bound kids because it arrived late and that is delaying your decisions. But you could get a present from this redesigned form as well.
Yeah, and that present, Rob, can come into the form of 529 accounts that are basically owned by grandparents and or other family members that don't include your immediate family. And what that loophole is that those assets are used, that 529 account is used for the student. It's no longer used or looked at as untaxed student income, which is a huge benefit for a lot of students. So previously to this, Rob, if assets came out of a 529 account to a student, it counted as untaxed student income, which would reduce their benefits or their potential subsidies and that such and scholarships. But this new formed FAFSA, right, the new FAFSA form just removes that entirely.
And then let's go in depth on this idea of the grandparent loophole. How does it work?
So a 529 account that instead of the parent being basically the custodian of that for the benefit of the student, a grandparent, or you don't have to have a grandparent, it just can't be within that family unit. It could be a sibling, a trusted friend, or the such. So that account is funded by not only the grandparents, it could be funded by others. And so when the child is in college age years and funds are needed, then the withdrawals are made. But again, because it's not a parent, that's where this loophole comes into effect in terms of that untaxed student income.
So if you are setting up a 529 account for a baby that is on the way, is it in your best interest then to have your parents set that account up, or could you also transfer custody of that 529 to your grandparents? Is that allowed?
Yeah, well said, Rob. And you can always transfer custody to another entity outside of the core family unit. And that's something that a lot of individuals do, again, previously to this, but also with these new FAFSA rules, absolutely. Whether it's set up initially for the grandchild or for the child, a niece, nephew, or whatever. But here's an important part, Rob. So 529 accounts that are owned under a UTMA or UGMA, that's Uniform Transfer to Minors Act, Uniform Gift to Minors Act, these are known as custodial accounts. This does not negate this from the loophole. So those assets that are held in a UTMA or UGMA, those will come up as untaxed student income. So again, when you're setting these things up, be very thoughtful of how you set them up in terms of custodialship. Again, setting them up as someone outside that core family unit, grandparent, parent, niece, or sorry, aunt, uncle is the proper way to do this, to take advantage of some of the loopholes that are in these FAFSA forms.
Ed Jurtzen, Certified Financial Planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.